if you stand up and do something correctly, people who care about that sort of thing will notice. They will notice and they will open doors for you. That's how the world works. Don't underestimate the utility of proper action. The goal for young people is to turn themselves into someone, for each person to turn themselves into a person who stands up straight and who pays attention and who can think and who can speak and who can act in relationship to the highest good they can conceive of. And that, I believe that that's a way of being that's noble enough so that if it's enacted, it also takes the sting out of the tragedy of life. There's something noble about bearing up under a heavy load. And human beings have a heavy load, there's no doubt about it. Now the question is, can you build yourself up into something that's strong enough to lift that without complaint and without corruption? Well, that's a noble goal. That's what young people should be doing. They should have a conception of who they could be. And that conception should be something like, if I could be like that, everything would be worthwhile. That's what you want to aim at, because you want to make everything worthwhile. And so do it. Money has done as much for you as it can do by the time you can pay your bills. It's like, well, define wealth. All right, that's easy. Heat in the winter. Mm-hmm. Air conditioning in the summer. Running water, right? Reliable shelter. And the provision of high quality food. Once you've got those, and then we could add to that, access to all the world's information. Okay, everyone has that virtually. Unless you've fallen right out of society. Maybe we could add reasonable access to healthcare to that. Although for most people, especially if they're young and healthy, that's irrelevant. But once you have those first six things, indoor plumbing, for example, you're already overwhelmingly rich by historical and even worldwide standards. You're already in the top 0.1% of all the human beings that have ever lived. And incremental movement past that just doesn't make that much difference, you know. So maybe you have a 10-year-old Hyundai Sonata. I have one of those. It's like, well, I could have a McLaren. But the incremental difference when we're stuck in a traffic jam is zero. So the radical leftists overestimate the utility of wealth in relationship to its capacity to solve the fundamental problems that beset human beings. So rich people get cancer. Rich people get divorced. Rich people get estranged from their children. They develop drug and alcohol problems. Like they're sued constantly for what they're doing. They're engaged in legal battles, and their lives tend to be extraordinarily complex because it's not easy to handle money. It disappears, man. If you don't keep an eye on it, if you're not watching it and monitoring it and earning it, generally speaking, it disappears. And that most family fortunes disappear in three generations. Mm. And most Fortune 500 companies only last 30 years. Mm. And there is a 1%, but it churns, you know. The 1% 10 years ago, they're not the same people that are the 1% now. People don't understand very well, because they don't look into it at all, is that most of the people who are in the 1% are old. So that, what do you want to be? You want to be young and poor, old and rich? You know, like what happens is, if you're lucky, as you move through life, you trade your youth for security,
yeah,
roughly speaking. But, you know, you're 75 and you have $5 million. Well, yeah, okay, you're 75. And, of course, the amount of wealth people have accumulates as they get older. Well, you know, if the person is fortunate and sensible, because they save up their money and they've had much more time to work. And so most of these things are multivariate problems, right? Why is there a 1%? Well, because the patriarchy is oppressive. It's like, yeah, okay, that accounts for 5% of the variance, or 10% of the variance if you want to really like push your argument. But then all sorts of other things kick in. Health is a good one, and intellectual power and conscientiousness and good luck and social network and timing is a huge part of it, and a lot of that's just random.
Yeah.
There's endless numbers of contributors to wealth disparity, not the oppression of the patriarchy. Jesus, you know, people who think that should be embarrassed at their stupidity. And the reason I'm saying that is because you don't really start talking that way till you've been educated a little bit. But to to turn everything into a univariate problem, like a one variable problem, is it's the hallmark of a tremendously ignorant and weak mind, because things are complicated. And so are the solutions. Man, things are complicated enough, but the solutions are even worse. Money has its utility, primarily as a tool for doing things, really. You know, you can think about it as a means for obtaining luxury items, but that gets dull pretty quickly for most people that have any sense. It's like, I've been to the houses of very wealthy people, and some of them are quite remarkable, but most of them, because they're creative people. But most of the time, I remember going to a gated community, for example, in California, and it was a huge house. It was probably 10,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. But it was no different than a 2,000 square foot house. It was just bigger. Like, the stoves were bigger, the fridge was bigger, the wine cellar was bigger. The rooms were bigger. Who cares? It's more to take care of. It's not helpful for anything unless you're using it for a creative purpose. And, you know, they also lived in a gated community, and you can hardly imagine anything duller than that. You know, like, there's nothing there. There's no bars. There's no nightlife. There's no nightclubs. There's no corner stores. There's no churches. There's nowhere for people to hang out. There's not even any sidewalks. So who cares? Males who occupy positions of power are much more attractive to women. So there's a famous Canadian psychologist, team of Canadian psychologists, Margot Wilson and Martin Daly, who worked out at Hamilton, at McMaster, Canada's most outstanding evolutionary psychologists, did a study at one point showing that, first of all, they established the relationship between inequality and male aggression. The correlation is like 0.8. It's off the charts, man. It's like, it's one of the, maybe it might be the most powerful relationship between two hypothetically independent variables that psychologists or social scientists have ever discovered. It's off the charts. So inequality fosters male-on-male violence, and it's because of competition for scarce resources, and it's driven by sexual selection pressures, roughly speaking.
Yes.
One of the things that Daly and Wilson did, and I believe this was in Chicago as well, they did an ethnological, anthropological study of the consequence of interracial murder in the gang setting in Chicago. So basically what would happen is two gangs were vying for territorial dominance, let's say, mm-hmm. and there was some kind of violent exchange. So let's call it a fight. Well, the thing is, if you're in one gang and I'm in another, and we engage in a violent altercation, one of us perhaps might die, but who's going to die is a toss-up. Right, so that means that I can plead self-defense if I'm involved in that altercation. Well, and so generally what happened was that the plea was self-defense. The charge was plea bargained down to involuntary manslaughter or to manslaughter. The person was thrown in jail for or sentenced for perhaps 3 years and served something like 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then when they re-entered the fray, when they were back out on the streets, their credibility had increased substantially, and so had their probability of success. Mm-hmm. So the left's concern with inequality is a justifiable concern. The problem is we don't know what to do with it. We don't know what to do about it. It's very difficult to shovel money and other resources, because it isn't only money that this sort of process applies to. It's very difficult to shovel resources from the pile at the top down to the many at the bottom who are hovering around zero.
Yeah.
So it's something that has to be taken into account because, well, first, it's not good for everybody to be stacking up at zero, and second, it destabilizes the society itself. Uh-huh. So, but that doesn't mean we know what to do about it. That's the critical thing. It also doesn't mean that the reason that the people at the top have most of the resources, regardless of what those resources are, it doesn't mean that the reason they have them is because they're exploiting the people at the bottom. Now, there is an element of exploitation in any complex productive system, always, because they don't operate completely fairly, right? So, yeah. Suffering is built into the fabric of human existence. And so you are vulnerable and you will die. And you can, you know, that's harsh. That's tragic, I would say. Mm-hmm. And tragedy is built into being. And so to the degree that you partake in that tragedy, you could consider yourself, although I think it's the wrong way of conceptualizing it, you could consider yourself as a victim among the universality of victimhood. I think that's not a helpful way of looking at it, because it leads to despair. But to think of yourself as a particular victim, or to think of yourself as a victim among the privileged, I think that gets dangerous extraordinarily rapidly.